You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris, and today on The Breakfast Grill, we have a panel of guests to discuss the Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Act. Now, the PCAP was passed in a bid to protect Malaysian consumers against unreasonable increases in prices of goods and services following the implementation of GST. But now there's a newly gazetted version of the Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Act with the anti-profiteering mechanism, which perhaps have not had all the kinks worked out yet. So here to explain the technicalities of the new PCAP regulations is Dr. Virinderjit Singh, the Executive Chairman of Professional Services Advisory, Excel Asia. And to share with us the perspective of businesses, Dr. Amir Ali Maidin, Managing Director of the Hypermarket and Emporium chain Maidin. Gentlemen, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Now, let's jump right in. I think, Dr. Virinderjit, let's start with you. If you can give us some background as to the Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Act, 2011, but it was implemented just before GST. Is that right?
Yes. Let me just give you the terminology.
Sure.
The Price Control and Anti-Profiteering, then mechanism to determine unreasonably high profit, net profit margin regulations 2014. That was that's the actual name. And that the whole name suggests that the idea of these regulations was to control unreasonably high profit margins. All right, that was introduced in 2014, and that was really meant to be pre and post GST. So it started from 2nd of January 2015, and then it was actually to 31st March 2015. That's the pre-GST period. And then it was extended from 1st April 2015, which was the start of GST, and right up to 31st December 2015. Originally, it was only meant for 1st April 2015 to 30th June 2015. Then they extended it to December of 2015.
Right.
So that has now expired. And the whole rationale there was really to prevent businesses from increasing their margins unreasonably because of the input GST tax that they would have incurred on their purchases. And because these are recoverable, so you shouldn't be adding it on to make more profits. So that was the main rationale. The other part of it was the businesses which have been paying sales tax were entitled to get a refund based on certain conditions. So this refund is coming back. Therefore, the sales tax should not be added on in terms of higher margins. And that was the rationale. I think everybody in due course did understand the rationale. And this applied to all goods and services.
Across the board.
It had formulas in the regulations as well. And the challenges there were actually trying to manage that in terms of each item that you have and trying to ensure that you don't make unreasonably high margins. So there were some practical difficulties, I think. But whatever said and done, you've never really heard of anyone being prosecuted for making unreasonably high profit margins. I know there were cases, but in the end of the day, it was probably compounded and settled, right? So that was fine. I think one the rationale was very clear that if you are getting input tax on your purchases, you're getting recoverable, you're going to recover it, then you cannot charge higher profit because of that. All right, so that's clear. The new one is called Price Control and Anti-Profiteering, then within brackets, Mechanism to Determine Unreasonably High Profit for Goods.
That's the entire name.
Close bracket, entire name. Regulations 2016.
Okay. How are we going to short form this?
Oh, well, I think you're saying PCAP. PCAP is probably the common acronym.
Okay.
But the regulations came out. This was effective from 1st January 2017. And I think it surprised everyone because we didn't know this was going to come. And I think there's a transitional period up to end of March for traders to familiarize themselves and get ready, whatever that means, in terms of technical, I suppose, understanding the formulas and so on. The one interesting thing about this is that this has no expiration date.
Right.
And so later, perhaps, we can talk about what the whole rationale of this was. So there's formulas that have been introduced, and actually, to be quite frank, looking at it, it actually gives you a bit of a headache trying to understand all these formulas.
I tried to do that before the interview, and I thought, you know what, I'll leave it up to the tax expert.
So fundamentally, it simply says, we're looking at the margin, which is your sale price less the cost price, so that's your profit, divided by the cost price, you arrive at a percentage, right? And the thing is, the markup percentage should not be higher than the markup percentage at the beginning of the financial year. So any time during the year, your markup should remain the same as at the beginning of the financial year. A bit of a difficult situation because life doesn't stand still, you know. So this one is telling you that your markup percentage should remain the same throughout the year. Obviously, there are some exclusions here and there, but fundamentally, the rationale is to manage profit margins. The other thing is that this is only applicable to food and beverages and household goods. So it's limited. It doesn't apply to all goods and services. It only applies to this particular category.
So sure. The first iteration of this act was broad. It covered everything. Yeah. But now there's a narrower scope. Yeah. So just household goods and F&B. So why is that?
Well, the first one was very clear. There was goods and services tax applied to all goods and services except for certain exempt items. So I think there's a logic to it. This one is interesting. This is probably you should be asking the minister. But I think, if I may, I think it's about all this developments that have been happening over the past few years in terms of prices of goods, in particular food and beverages. The common complaints you hear from the man in the street is that Roti Canai has gone up, this has gone up, that's gone up. It keeps going up. But I think the general average man seems to think that everything is going up, and they're blaming it on many other things, including the GST and whatever it is. So I think the ministry, the relevant ministry in this case, perhaps is looking at a situation of how do we manage the cost of living. And in particular, they've started focusing on this food and beverages and household goods, which are the common items that everybody needs to use. And I think they've limited it to that. And with a view to trying to manage these costs. And so I think that's where it's coming from.
Right.
But I've never heard of any consultation or, you know, stakeholders getting involved. And so it's become a political thing in the sense of trying to manage people's needs and perhaps.
Yeah, this is, I think, where I can bring you in, Dato' Amir. I mean, as you know, Maidin, the Emporium, the supermarkets, the hypermarkets, you have a broad category of retail items. So how do you make that distinction?
You know, let me first start by saying, first you must thank the government. They brought us from one hell to another hell. Eh? They haven't got us out of that the thing. What I'm saying, you must thank the government, is that first, of course, originally, it covered everything.
Right.
So now it's a watered-down version of what was original. Okay, so say thank you, government. All right. But why still do it? As a businessman, I just can't seem to understand the rationale. All right. The first time when they implemented it during the GST era, every retailer, except Maidin, if I may say so, we complied 100%. Every big retailer that I know has been fined. 50,000, 100,000, 20,000. It's been reported in the papers. Some have been shamed. They are being shamed. Imagine a hypermarket building up, as I'm saying that I'm a low cost, everyday low price, and suddenly it's a front page in the Chinese paper saying that the ministry has fined him for profiteering. Imagine that 20 years of brand building has just gone down the drain because he increased the price of, say, a tofu by 10 cents. And that could be a mistake, seriously.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, the guy has been fined, he has been shamed. Who's going to pay this? Only God knows. All right, now, back to the regulation. First, it shouldn't be there in the first place. Why do it? Okay, I'm telling you, we are business people. The government wants businessmen to be honest, run professionally. Please don't put X in us. You want us to cheat? We can always cheat. All right? We are very good at cheating. All right? If you want to, but those people who don't want to, the government is actually forcing us to cheat. I'm telling you. All right? Because this profit margin issues, in the first place, how in the world are we going to figure this out? They're using a three-year margin analysis, 2014, 2015, 2016. So if you made 2% a year, 4% a year, oh, thank you very much. They use the bigger percentage. No question about it. So I say thank you to the government, 4%. Can you imagine, say an operator like me, a hypermarket, I decided that, you know what, I'm going to have very low margins for 3 years. I want to capture the whole market in Malaysia, right? Mm. For 3 years, I made only 2% margin, right? I got my market share. I said, ah, finally, I'm one of the biggest now, right? Let me now start making money. I can't increase my prices. I can't do it because my margin was 2% or 3%. Maybe I made losses because they're not looking at net, you know. They're looking at gross.
Okay, let's get into the implementation issues and the criticisms of this in a little bit. But, you know, when you said, Dr. Amir, that, you know, you can't understand why the government is doing this, simply put, the rationale from the government is that they want to safeguard consumers' interests.
They're playing to the gallery.
Well, I'm sure you must have heard of cases where, anecdotal evidence at least, where people say, oh, you know, after GST, this price went up this much and that price went up that much. People really felt cheated because some businesses, some, not all, some businesses moved to hike up prices.
Then go and enforce that part. Don't take a hammer to kill a fly. You know, businesses generally are good people. They are honest businessmen out here. So just because of one guy increased the roti canai or one noodle, one lady increased the price of noodle by 50 cents, what do you think? She suddenly bought a Mercedes car or what? The poor lady probably had to send her child to school, not surviving. You know, one thing about this, I tell you one thing about this. Okay, when they use margins for this, margin or markup, it doesn't matter. When there's a slowdown in the economy, which is now, if I was doing $1 million sales and I have a margin, so I make certain profits, what do I do now if my business from $1 million goes to $500,000? The market is slow.
Right.
The only way I will survive, and a lot of businesses, they will have to increase the margin. There's no provision for this.
Yeah.
There's no provision.
I think if I could interject, the point well made by Dato was the fact that if you look at a downturn or slow down in the economy, your margins will be, let's say, lower. And subsequently, if things improve and your margins go up, you will be accused of breaking this particular regulations because your margin cannot be increased based on a three-year average. So this is where you need to distinguish the economic circumstances.
But how do you factor that into this equation that's about three pages long?
You can't. So that's the issue about this. You're assuming that the economic environment is the same and, you know, the economic principles, mutatis mutandis, that everything is equal, remains the same. It's not.
You see, business changes. We change who we sell to.
Yeah.
I give you another example. Say there's a supplier who had been supplying to hypermarkets, all right? So he has to supply low prices, but he says, okay, I had low margin, they're good paymasters. But after a while, he says, you know what? I don't want to do this because hypermarkets go there, they you know, knock prices down, they spoil my brand. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to supply to wholesalers now. When you supply to wholesalers, you might want to put an extra margin. Why? Because wholesalers are not going to pay you cash. You have a credit risk, right? So he says, oh, I have to take into account this credit risk. So when I have to take into account this credit risk, I have to increase my margin. That's business. You get caught straight away. I was supplying to hypermarket. If I'm a manufacturer now, supplying to hypermarket at 2% margin. Now I'm selling on credit, maybe 60 days, 90 days, and times like this, maybe 6 months. So I've got to factor my margins higher. I'll be caught again. The poor manufacturer. There's so much loopholes in here.
Yeah, actually, that's a lot of loopholes, right?
And I'm telling you, they did consult the industry. The industry did explain the loopholes. But the government being government, they call us, I think, in Malay, they say, meluahkan perasaan saja, you know? Yeah. We cry our heart out. And end of the day, they say, thank you for your comments. This is what we are going to do. They listen sometime, they water down it, you know, they do a watered down version, but they don't want to give it up because then the consumers will say, oh, the government is very weak, you know, they're looking at the businesses, businesses are profiteering. Everybody thinks businesses are profiteering. You know, the Malaysian supermarket, hypermarket, or the retail is so competitive. So competitive here. Seriously, competitive. You don't hear people making hundreds of millions of profit, right? So this is a big issue. Another, of course, is that if you increase productivity,
you become more efficient.
You become more efficient. Well, they say, yeah, if you increase productivity, we'll give you the leeway. But the regulation doesn't say clearly what leeway. And if you're going to tell me, if I'm going to tell the government I increase my productivity by 3%, they will say, show me how. How did I increase productivity? I mean, you know, how do I go and calculate that I used to fold 5 T-shirts in an hour, now I can fold 10 T-shirts? You know, to comply for that. You know, when the regulation, the first one was in place, we seriously went through hell, all of us. Because each officer walks in and says, show me why you increased the price. So I have to go and calculate back that the electricity went up by 5 cents, the wages went up by 5 cents, by this cent. Oh, so I increased my price. You know what happens now? Very easy. Change the packaging. They cannot do anything.
What do you mean change the packaging?
Well, example, if you're buying a beverage at 1 kilo, it was 10 ringgit. The manufacturer says, let me make it 800 gram. I'll make it 950. It's the same beverage. It's a new number.
So
it's a new SKU.
So
you can never track it.
Packaging you reduce the volume of the
whether
product.
Whether you reduce or you increase, it becomes a different item.
Right.
They can only go on same item. I am telling you, how are you going to tell? So you are telling manufacturers, please cheat. Please cheat. And there's a cost. Huh? There's a cost to this. So there's a cost. Of course, the consumers are paying for the cost.
We'll be back in just a few moments with our panelists to discuss the Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Act. So make sure you stay tuned to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. And today on the show, I have two gentlemen here to discuss the newly gazetted Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Regulations of 2016. Dr. Vrindajit Singh, Executive Chairman of Professional Services Advisory XL Asia, and also Datuk Wira Dr. Amir Ali Maidin, Managing Director of the Maidin Emporium Chain. So, Dr. Vrinda, yes. Do you have anything to add to what Dr. Amir was saying?
Dato was just mentioning about the fact that the government is using a hammer to swat a fly.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you another analogy in terms of income tax, if I may. Religious institutions have an exemption from tax on all income, you know, whether it's the contributions received, whether it's some rental income that they make from, you know, renting out part of the premises, or even some interest from money that they have in fixed deposit. The law was changed to, and this is very quietly done because it just changed the law and only technicians see it. And we actually said that the exemption now only applies to contributions, right? That means that those temples, mosques and so on, and churches who may be renting out some space and get rental income are now taxable on the rental income. They are taxable on the interest income that they get from fixed deposit or whatever. So this was, and this is picked up by the papers, although some of us have already mentioned it long ago, nobody saw it. Then they built, it became a big of it. And finally, what happens? Enough voices are heard. The religious institutions meet the minister, and minister was quoted in the papers not too long ago to say that he will now issue an exemption order exempting all income of religious institutions from tax, which then fundamentally reverts back to the old situation. Now, when asked about why was it necessary to even remove this total exemption, some of the comments you hear from the authorities would be, oh, there were abuses, there were organizations that were supposed to be looking at religious aspects are doing other things and making some money out of it, so why should we grant them an exemption on what they make? So my comment has been that, look, if you find that there are some abuses, tackle that abuse, go after that particular institution, do an audit and solve their problem. Why do you need to change the law and just because you say there are a few cases of abuses? So this is an example where you need to tackle the issue at source. And you have the manpower, resources to do audits and verify, just like even in the case of prices. if you feel there's an unduly high margin being made by certain dealers and so on, then go investigate. You don't need a particular law to fix the percentages and then make it applicable to all food and goods. So this is the situation. I think we are seeing government agencies and ministries reacting quite negatively to whatever is being said and bringing out laws which actually hamper competitiveness and creativity, and in the end may lead, as exactly what Dato said, may lead to many of these people finding ways and means to change the rules if in their sense and still get away with it. Because exactly what he said, if this applies to a particular product, an item of which is 1 kg, you now change it and it becomes 800 grams, it's a new product.
Dato Amir, you said that you had some engagement with the Ministry of Domestic Trade and Cooperatives and Consumerism. This was before or after the new regulations were rolled out?
Before.
And what about you, Dr. Vrin?
No, this only involved the industry. So as far as consultants, they're not involved. And I think recently it was reported that even after the regulations came out, there were some clarifications and various industry players did go in. But the report seemed to indicate that they came out of it more confused in the sense that things couldn't be
more
clarified.
More questions than answers. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, the ministry said that they were coming up with more guidelines next month. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, that guidelines probably will confuse all of us more anyway. All right. Doctor mentioned about the income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've come up with Chip Sale Regulation 2016, which has been amended, which is another topic. Okay,
yeah.
If I get into that, it's going to be another 1 hour of your time. All right?
Does that mean that you sell cheap at certain periods of time?
We used to have 8 times. Now they dropped it to 4 times.
Okay.
3, fixed, and 1, we have the right to do when we want to do it. Okay. As usual, they've forgotten that Gawai is also another festival in Malaysia. So we cannot do during Gawai because during that fixed timeline, it is different reason. But that's another topic. You can call us again one more time for that one. But let me just mention one more thing. All right. And you can hear from my tone of my voice that I'm a very frustrated businessman. Okay. It is really frustrating simply because the government doesn't take into account what happens in the real world. I give a very simple regulation. It's a very simple thing. I'll go to China today to buy lychee for Hari Raya. Okay? And let's assume I buy lychee at $1, US dollars, which comes to 4.5 ringgit. I tag all my products before they come to Malaysia. Lychee, just an example. Say I decide to put all RSP prices on the can of lychee. So $1, I said, it's 4.5. I'm selling lychee at now, maybe only at 380 because I bought that at 380, right? So $1 was 380, 380. Now I go, it's 4.5. So let me tag it at 4.5.
Yes.
Right.
Am I profitable? Not yet, because the goods have not come yet. But I've already tagged it 4.5. My shipment comes. Wow, we are so lucky today. US dollar has gone to 4.0. The officers will come. Why are you selling at 4.5? Your tagging is 4.5. The US rate is only 4. Earlier was 3.8. Oh, I have to change the labels for all my items? You know, I sell 100,000 items in my store.
Right, so the compliance cost goes up exponentially.
I can't change the labels. I can't change. It's humanly impossible to do it, right? I mean, lychee don't have price tags on it, but if I had, that's just using an example. It could be onion, it could be anything that I want to do. If prices change because of currency, what do I do? Because we tag them, right? If I'm going to tag it here, it's going to cost me more.
Is there a practical solution to this? Instead of tagging each individual item, you just put the price on the shelf?
Well, that's very nice. But if you take onions, you don't put it on the shelf. You put it on the pallet.
Yeah.
So then you will pick up the onion and say, well, where's your tag? And the tag up there, maybe they can't see.
Right.
You know, it's an example. So, of course, there's a practical solution to all this. Very practical. Don't have the egg in the first place. Who asked you to do it in the first place?
So I think the point is compliance costs. Shot up with all these regulations. So that's going to be a big challenge, because at the same time, you're looking at an economy that is not on very good solid footing.
Weak consumer sentiment.
Yes, you have controls in terms of profit margins you can make. Then you have high compliance costs. Then you got other labor costs, imported inflation, because whatever you buy from overseas, and the currency issues don't help. So actually, you are looking at a very catch-22 situation where you're caught at all corners, and not a good thing in the sense.
And right? you know, seriously, like I said, if you want us to cheat, we can always cheat. And the way to do it is very simple. You bring a product in at a dollar. The first day you put a product on the shelf, you put it 2 ringgit. So that is your margin. So the government locks that margin first, right? You bring a product, $1. One day I sell it at 2 ringgit. Oh, I've got that's my margin. Yep. The next day, I can make it 180, 170, 160, 150, 120, 110, 90. Yep. It doesn't matter. They cannot catch me.
Yeah. It's going down.
They cannot catch me. I'm going down. My price on that first day was 2 ringgit. You know what I need to do? 1st of January, pass through all the prices in my system, double it up. You know? And 2nd of January, bring it all down. Now, who's going to pay for that compliance cost? Like you say, it's going to be messy. Like I said, there's always ways around the regulation. Right. But it increases our cost.
Well, we're going to take a short break for the news bulletin, but we'll be right back with an extended Breakfast Grill discussing the Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Act, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris with an extended Breakfast Grill discussing the Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Act. Dr. Vrindajit Singh, Executive Chairman of Professional Services Advisory XL Asia, and also Datuk Wira Dr. Amir Ali Maidin, Managing Director of the Maidin Emporium Chain. Dr. Vrinda, I'd like to come back to the question, a simple question. The name of this act is Price Control and Anti-Profiteering, but are they the same thing? Price control, is that the same thing as anti-profiteering?
Well, indirectly, I suppose if you put it all together, it does gel.
Right.
But fundamentally, there is one way of looking at it. Anti-profiteering is a different element in terms of price control. The price control, what we're looking at in terms of festive season, there are this particular goods and so on. So that act is still there.
Yes.
So
that price of chicken is controlled,
correct,
and eggs and
so on. So calling this again price control anti-profiteering sounds like complicating issues and mixing two things. So maybe you should have simply looked at anti-profiteering or, you know, net profit margin, whatever, maintaining the regulation. So price control seems to be a misnomer.
Right.
But if you look at the end result, it does appear that the objective of controlling your profit margin is also indirectly linked to overall price control. Right. But it's not setting the price, it's looking at your profit margin. So there's a difference. Mm-hmm. So I would rather say that price control should be remain as separately from anti-profiteering.
Yeah. And just coming back to, you know, the compliance costs and what over-regulation can do to businesses, it doesn't foster a conducive business-friendly Malaysia, as how we've touted ourselves to be. We are an attractive investment destination.
Correct. Was that a joke?
Well, you know, I'm trying to reconcile, because I think what's being promoted doesn't jive with the actual scenario on the ground.
You know, the government intention is always good. You see, government intention or the civil service, intentionally they have good intention, right? But when they come up with rules and sometimes not understanding the real business, this is the issue, seriously. And they don't listen enough. They call us, but they don't listen. I think that is the main.
It does appear that many times the decision is made, minds are made up, and then when you have a consultation, it's more lip service in a sense. You get that impression, because you also go for various consultations for tax situations and all, and you find that at the end of the day, it's being done so that you can tick it off your checklist that we've done this dialogue.
But, you know, the foreign labour policy was quite effective after engagement with industry.
Agreed. But the issue with that is that it depends who the players are. And obviously, the one who shouts the loudest gets attention. And I think, let's put it this way, the recent developments where the government has backtracked on a number of initiatives,
including the foreign labour.
Yes. And at one point, it was even minimum wage, but that fortunately stayed where it was. So there is a situation here that there are strong lobby groups. And in the end of the day, you know, the links with politicians does work. So you do get a situation of some things are taken off the shelf. But I think one needs to look at a big picture in the sense that look at the economy now, look at the economy last year and this year, and look at where we are heading. Bringing in too much of regulations, including the issue on foreign labor, at this particular time seems to be just over the top. And you need to wait for it on another day when we are in a better position. So that's the impression you get with all these regulations.
Actually, there's so many things the government can do.
For instance?
Why you have AP on cabbage? Why do you have AP on chicken? Why can't I import chicken from Brazil? It's the cheapest chicken. Why do I have to get my consumers, my customers to pay $7.50 a kilo? But if you let me import, it's probably be $4.50. Right? Yes. Why do they restrict it?
Liberalization.
Liberalize import. Let whoever wants to import, let them import. Yes, get that place certified by Jakim, make sure it's halal, of course. As a Muslim, I'm more sensitive to this than anybody else. Mm. Cabbage, why do you have to have AP and APs?
But, you know, we're not quite the free market, you know, economy that we
want. We claim to be. I think there's money to be made everywhere, right? So if you liberalize it, right, I think we pick it up every day, somebody's getting caught for something, right? If you open it up, there'll be less chances for people to make money out of it. At the end of the day, the consumer will really benefit.
The challenge to this is that Malaysia gets involved in a lot of rankings and competitiveness and doing business in the guide that the World Bank does, a doing business survey. And I think if you really look into all these particular points and really analyze this, you actually will find that these things will actually affect your rankings. Because this is not making business easy. The whole idea of that is we want to be a destination which makes business easy. That was the whole idea of getting involved in all this doing business rankings and so on. But if you really analyze it, it's actually become much tougher.
Coming back to this regulation, Doctor, why do you think there's no end date?
Because I think by not having an end date, it gives the ministry the power to decide when they wish to take it off.
Is that a good thing? So they could decide by the end of the month they want to remove it?
Yeah. Well, no, plus or minus. To a business, it's negative. It's a negative thing because you're not having end in sight.
No certainty.
I need certainty. Right. But to the ministry, you're right. They could say that, well, after 6 months, things are working well, we'll remove it. So from ministry's point of view, it gives them that power to determine. But businesses need certainty. Businesses don't need all this.
We need clarity.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, one of the things that struck me when I was doing the research for this interview was the fact that anti-profiteering measures have been used by many other countries, but only temporarily to combat whatever temporary price spike. Singapore doesn't have any anti-profiteering law. Thailand had it for a bit, but they superseded it with another Competition Act. Australia only had it for the 22 months they had after GST. So clearly, and I'm just wondering, given the fact that this regulation has been extended time after time, could it mean that the government is creating a situation where they intend to perhaps increase GST and making sure that the ground is fertile for that?
I don't think so. I think even if there is going to be a GST increase, you don't need these regulations again. They were only there, for example, Australia. They were only there because of post-GST. And it is a fact that if you look at analysis and studies on GST, the possibility of a spike in prices is real. And so the idea was to manage it so that the spike is not unduly excessive. Mm. Because like we said, you pay for your purchases, but that input tax is recoverable. So you shouldn't be saying, get your consumers to pay for it. That's a legitimate reason, and that's why countries do this. Now, once the GST is already in place, which we have, then increasing a percentage of GST doesn't have that same impact anymore. There's no more issue of our input tax and all. It's already there. You've reset it. People understand it. Businesses understand it. What you need to do is, of course, continually monitor and audit and so on. So you don't really need this even if you need an increase in the GST rate. So no.
Well, is it then timing, you reckon? I mean, this is said to be an election year, and seen to be a very populist measure. It's it's very popular with consumers.
No, first, yes. I want to be on record that GST, when it was implemented, it seriously did not increase the prices of goods because sales tax was removed.
It replaced sales tax.
So basically, there was not real increase. But we were so unlucky that our currency weakened. So the whole price increase scenario was because of the weakened currency. Because basically, Malaysia imports everything. Seriously, what is it that you have in Malaysia? Extra palm oil, right? Even your curry puff, if you look at it, the potato is imported, the fly is imported, right? The person frying it probably imported too. Right? Only your cooking oil is probably local. Right? Yeah. So everything is imported. So we have got inflation. It's basically because of currency. Imagine, I'm telling you, from 4.5 today, if it goes back to 3.8, prices, it will go down. People, businesses are not here to profiteer. Businesses are here to make a reasonable margin from the investment. You know, and you hear all this, that noodle lady selling expensive, the mama fella selling. Come on, the guy is just trying to survive.
Okay, well, when it comes to regulation of markets, the government has to face this tough balancing act of not overburdening businesses, but also trying to preserve consumers' protection. So if the Ministry of Domestic Trade was listening to us right now, in fact, if you were in a position to make a change to this regulation, what would you like them to know and what would you like them to do?
You know what I think? We have the Price Control Act. Yeah. If something seriously goes wrong, they just have to increase the list.
Yes.
They only do for during festive season at the moment. Thank God for that. But if there's an emergency, if you really find that somebody is profiteering for whatever reason, take the item, use your price controller and say from tomorrow, the price of your beverage is going to be only 2 ringgit. Whatever. Fine. There are rules there. They can do it. But why start having other things in there?
So I think the solution to that would be in some countries you have price control monitoring boards. For certain things, where you are going to increase a price, you just consult and you get so-called endorsement. It doesn't need anti-profiteering profit margins or whatever. You need that particular monitoring body, which simply is there to guide and make a decision and say, yes, this seems fine, in line with it. That can be done. Because you don't have regulation, you just have monitoring boards. Maybe for certain types of goods, like pharmaceuticals and so on. Mm. And because that's important. In a number of jurisdictions in Australia as well, there is some price monitoring, but you don't have this kind of regulation. You don't need that. You need to have a particular agency which will guide and help you monitor and say, yes, legitimate, that's fine, please go ahead and increase the price. It's really looking at making a consultative approach. I think that's probably the best way. And this Price Control Act that we have right now exactly is only for festive seasons. And one wonders why only festive seasons. It gives you a false sense of, feeling that prices are under control. They need not be. But I think the point that we need to look at in the context of Malaysia is self-sufficiency in terms of food. We once had this as a national policy, rice, for example. Mm-hmm. Where has it gone? It's all gone south in the sense that it's not working out. We actually ended up importing more than we ever needed. So self-sufficiency, being an agricultural economy in the past, and we still are in some ways strong in agriculture, this self-sufficiency in food, and instead of having to import everything, I mean, you can't say I don't import anything, but you may import some. But that's probably the long-term objective. And then managing price, and as well as logistics. Because the movement, I mean, Sabah, Sarawak, Malaysia, prices of goods because of logistics, transport. Why can't this system be
right? Even the price control, like, seriously, you mentioned chicken, right? You know, if I can't make money out of chicken, I'll just sell chicken parts. Chicken parts, no price control.
Chicken parts are not considered under controlled
item. No, it's only the whole chicken.
It's just the whole chicken.
Whole chicken, all right? So the minute there's no, if I'm not going to make money from the whole chicken, I'm telling you, we are business people.
You'll find a way.
We'll find a way. We'll when you go to a hypermarket and you say, I want chicken, I'm sorry.
So
I just buy the chicken part, right? Yeah.
So because businesses will find a way, you're telling government to take a step back. Markets will find
a way.
And
if somebody's naughty, go after them, you know. Generally, I think we must always say that everybody is good, there's some people bad. Don't say everybody is bad and there are some people good. I think the whole thinking process, that is more important.
You have a broad benchmarks and you send a message across and businesses will generally follow and you don't need regulations to do that, but you need enforcement. I think the weakest link in Malaysia has always been enforcement in everything. So improve that and maybe and let businesses do what they do best. All right. So I think that's probably the best way to go through.
Well said. You've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. That was Dr. Virendrajit Singh, Executive Chairman of Axel Asia. And earlier you heard from Dato' Amir Ali Maidin, Managing Director of Maidin. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being on the show and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm Melissa Idris for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.